Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Collaborative Voices from Community Networks Aotearoa. Conversations and interviews on all kinds of subjects of interest to the community and voluntary sector. Listen up for Collaborative Voices from Wellington Access Radio.
Welcome to Collaborative Voices. I'm Roz Rice and I work for Community Networks Aotearoa, and today it's my great pleasure to have in the studio with me Sue Barker. Now, if you don't know who Sue is, you're going to know in a minute, but Sue was also the person I interviewed for my last radio show. But today we're talking about something different but aligned, I suspect. Sue, do you want to just introduce yourself?
Hi, Roz. Thank you for having me. Yes, my name is Sue Barker. I'm a lawyer based in Wellington, specialising in charities law and public tax law. And for the last 2 years, I've been on sabbatical as the New Zealand Law Foundation International Research Fellow, Te Karahipi Rangahau Ātaio, undertaking research into the question, what does a world-leading framework of charities law look like, with a report issued last month.
It's a huge report. It's a massive tome. I printed it off in my printer just about died. So we're going to be talking about that report today. We've got so much to talk about today, folk, that we're not going to have a music break because we're not going to be able to fit in everything we want to say. But we're going to be talking about some of the recommendations and the conclusions that Sue has come to. And quite frankly, the conversation that Sue and I have, I'm pretty much there with her all the way. All the things that she's talking about, I can't but agree, but it's really important that all of you out there start hearing about what is happening to charities in New Zealand at the moment, and a lot of that is around charities law reform. So I thought let's just start off quickly with the review of the Charities Act and where the Charities Act started with Labor how many years ago?
Well, it was a process. Actually, it goes back to last century, to be honest. And I think it's important to note in that context that before the Charities Act came into force in 2005, charities enjoyed very high levels of public trust and confidence.
Yes.
Public trust and confidence in charities does not derive from the Charities Act.
From charity services.
That's right. What the Charities Act was trying to address was a lack of information. And by the time the Charities Act was introduced, or the Charities Bill was introduced in 2004, it had been more than 20 years in gestation. It was preceded by a number of reports. But even though it had had all of that preparation, the initial bill that was introduced into Parliament was widely regarded as fundamentally flawed, and
yeah,
it was almost completely rewritten at select committee stage in response to hundreds of submissions. And that rewritten bill, plus further substantial changes that were made by supplementary order paper, was not subject to proper consultation.
No, they rushed it through, didn't they? And it was presented, wasn't it, by Michael Cullen?
That's right. It was rushed through under urgency with all final stages happening on one day, 12 April 2005. And concerns that fast law does not make good law were assuaged at the time by the Honourable late Sir Michael Cullen, saying, don't worry about it, charitable sector. We'll give it a proper first principles post-implementation review.
And in 5 years? Wasn't it promised in 5 years?
Well, that would be normal. I mean, after a big piece of major reform, it would be normal to have a post-implementation review after 5 years. But here we are nearly two decades later and we're still waiting.
Well, they think they've done it. So we hear, you know, we've all heard about the law reform for the Charities Act, and many NGOs out there and social services and others have put in their thoughts to select committees.
Yep.
And the interesting thing that I've always found about the one that they're doing at the that they've just been doing and that has yet to go to Parliament is that it's not a first principles review.
Nothing like
it. Can you explain what a first principles review would look like?
Well, I can. Chapter 9.
Oh, in this much time.
Well, you know, the key issues for the charitable sector are the three A's, appeals, advocacy and agency structure.
Mm.
Because you'll be aware that the Charities Commission was disestablished in 2012.
Yes.
Against the strong opposition of the charitable sector.
And moved into DIA.
That's right. A structure even closer to government than the original Crown agency structure that was in the original Charities Bill that was comprehensively rejected at that time.
Yep. Well, I think the big worry back when it was moved into DIA, and it's proven to come through, is that it was an independent agency prior to that. But once it moved into DIA, all the decisions of charity services came under the direct purview of the minister.
Exactly.
So the minister could have influence over what charity services did and decided.
Exactly. And that's why they put in the three-person charities registration board in order to act as a check on charity services decision making. But if you have a look at Chapter 7 in the report, I've gone into detail about how that structure is working in practice so that people can draw their own conclusions. Is the structure actually providing independent decision making? Is the board sufficiently distanced from charity services to be able to act as an independent check? And is the structure working? And if not, what are the consequences for our civil society and ultimately our democracy?
So it's really nice that you've put it out all out there in a nice, really way. But my feeling is that it's a rubber stamp board.
Well, I mean, in practice, the board just isn't resourced to act as the independent check that was intended. And charity decision making is being driven by charity services. And what really bothers me about the current structure is that when the Charities Commission was disestablished, all of the accountability mechanisms that are provided by the Crown Entities Act were removed.
Yes.
But they weren't replaced with anything.
They also removed the education side of charity services, which was a very strong belief of the sector that if there was going to be a charity service, they could at least help the sector with education and sharing of information.
Well, and it was Labor Party policy for the 2017 general election to consult with the charitable sector on whether the disestablishment of the Charities Commission has resulted in a more effective framework for the charitable sector. That is a key issue for the charitable sector, according to the submissions to the government's review of the Charities Act, which remained in 2019. And it also came through very strongly in our research. Mm. And yet the government is refusing to look at it.
Yes.
And I think the charitable sector, you know, it's now or never. If we get an unhelpful bill, which the minister is saying,
it's going to take forever to ever change it.
Exactly. If the Canadian experience is anything to go by, it will be 40 years. Canada is described as having been on a 40-year odyssey. They got unhelpful legislation and they are only now, several decades later, in the process of turning it around with the appointment of the advisory committee on the charitable sector over there.
So can I get back to what I think and you think is... and we'll share it, is one of the basic underlying reasons why we're having these problems with government understanding the charity sector or listening to the charity sector. And I and you put it really beautifully how it's a clash of paradigms.
Yeah.
You're talking about how the lens that government tends and the charity services definitely tend to look through when they're looking at charity services.
Yeah.
And... put it in a nutshell, they often look at us because if you're a registered charity, you can become tax-free.
Yeah.
And so they look at us and go, there's too many charities, we're not getting enough tax dollars from them, rather than looking at them and saying, thank goodness communities are standing up and trying to do the work. Thank goodness that charities are there to help our social structure and to thank goodness so many volunteers are out there, because otherwise government would have to do it and that would be a damn sight more expensive. Why can't they see that their focus on how much tax they're losing isn't including the added value and how much we actually add? I mean, I think at the moment... we put $2.1 billion into GDP, or $12.1 billion, I'm telling a lie, $12.1 billion into GDP. Why can't they see the advantage of charities rather than always looking at what they think is a disadvantage financially?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And I would really encourage listeners to have a look at chapters 1 and 2 of the report in particular, because I really go into detail about why charities are so often overlooked. To be honest, I think a large part of the problem is that this current structure of having charity services as a business unit within the DIA, an agency which also funds actually a lot of registered charities,
yeah, so there's a conflict
of interest.
Yeah.
That structure structurally undermines undermines public trust and confidence in charities.
Look, you know, I've got a really good example, and that is when they first put us in under the international financial arrangements, and they set up our service performance reports and things like that. They did tours all around the country to bring everybody up to date, and they said, thank goodness we're doing this, but we do acknowledge that this is really difficult stuff for people to understand. So we're expecting it to take approximately 5 years for people to come to terms with it. So we're not going to pressure people, but, you know, over time we know that people will gradually understand about their service performance reports and what they need to put in the financial reporting. And then at the end of the first year, the headlines that went out is something like, and I might have the numbers wrong, 37% of charities have not met their obligations. Yeah, it's the first year. And secondly, it doesn't say how amazing that, what is it, 43% of charities have actually already caught on and are doing well in the first year. Mm-hmm. They always put out the negatives.
Yeah.
They always say, you always see the big splash in the media, the report out, somebody's done something wrong. You'd never see the positives coming out, big splash in the media. Actually, the majority of our charitable organisations are fantastic and doing really great work. So, you know, public trust and confidence, I think they undermine it.
I do too. And actually, I've got an example which listeners might be interested in, is because after the mosque attacks, there was a charity that was overwhelmed with donations and really struggling to process the volume that they were receiving. And they were being crucified In social media for not distributing the funds fast enough. And when an equivalent situation arose in Australia after the bushfires and charities were being overwhelmed with donations, the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profit Commissioner stood up for the charitable sector, was reported in the media, wrote an article for the Australian, has a big piece on the ACNC website saying, actually, these charities did everything right, the funds will be distributed in due course, everything's fine, nothing to see here, whereas charity services said nothing. So this poor charity was crucified and nobody was there to stand up for them. And I think that's the distinction between having an independent agency administering the charities legislation. We really need it.
And it's also really interesting that the charity services is classified as a business unit.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, we're all small businesses. Charities are all small businesses, but we're small businesses with a difference and with different purpose and intent. And we don't make profit. So we might make surpluses that we then have to put back into our organisation. We don't have people out there that we give money to, you know, at our AGMs, say this is how much you're going to get. We don't have that kind of system. So we're not really business as most people think.
No. And it really bothers me that charity services seems to have this tax focus, that charities have tax privileges, so we have to reduce the number of charities because they're a fiscal cost and some kind of drain on society. It really bothers me because prior to the Charities Act, charities legislation or the framework for charities was administered by IRD, by the tax authority.
Yes.
And it was removed from the tax authority and put into charity services. The Charities Act says absolutely nothing about tax. Charity services has no mandate. And I would argue that, certainly from my research, it appears that New Zealand actually has the most comprehensive transparency and accountability framework for charities in the world. Now, I haven't researched all countries, but I was asked to research comparable jurisdictions, Australia, Canada, England and Wales, Ireland and the US. And certainly from I did look at some other countries as well. Certainly New Zealand is the most comprehensive. And I would argue that the quid pro quo for registered charitable status is this requirement to make comprehensive disclosure available on the charities register. It's not, you don't morph into some service delivery arm of government and be required to be restricted to what you can do and what you can say in terms of what a government department thinks is, you know.
But that's a risk that we're facing, isn't it?
Well, that's what's exactly happening in my view, yes.
Yeah. So getting back to the charities review, gosh, we've hardly got there.
yeah.
I just wanted to talk about the fact that charities, it's DIA that's doing the review.
Yeah, I know.
And DIA is the organisation Charity Services sits in as
exactly.
a business unit.
Yeah.
Isn't that a conflict of interest? And why isn't it going out to an independent body like the Law Commission?
I know. Well, that's been a problem all along. So actually the kind of the next step in the Charities Act review was 2016 when the Department of Internal Affairs tried to remove the vast bulk of charities' rights of appeal. And they were trying to do it by statutes amendment bill over Christmas. And it was actually by accident that we noticed it, and we raised it with DIA, and we raised it with the Select Committee. And eventually the Select Committee took it out of the bill. And after that process, it became Labor Party policy to conduct a proper first principles post-implementation review of the Charities Act.
Which still hasn't happened.
Which hasn't happened, no. Mm. So that was their policy going into the 2017 election, and they won that election and formed a coalition government with New Zealand First. And the new minister, Minister Henare, wouldn't meet with the charitable sector. We were given draft terms of reference for the review, and we all collectively, the sector group, collectively and democratically said, this review does not honour Labor Party policy. Please, can you make it a proper first principles review? But then they just basically went ahead and finalised it
just
in the terms that the sector group, handpicked by Charity Services as you know, representatives of the charitable sector, they completely ignored it and finalised the terms of reference for the review in this very attenuated form. It's not only the nature, it is problematic that the DIA is tasked with reviewing itself. I mean, I know they'll say that the policy unit is separate from charities, but it's not.
No,
not sufficiently.
And you should see how many people who work in charity services move into other parts of DIA and back and forward.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And actually, another problem with that unit is that its status within government doesn't reflect the independence and importance of the charitable sector, which is another way in which it undermines public trust and confidence in charities.
But why aren't they, what is their, do they want to continue to control charities?
I think they see that the way to, now obviously I can't speak for them, but my impression is that their vision of what would constitute public trust and confidence in charities is to regulate them, is to regulate what they can say, what they can do, and basically on the basis of the tax privileges. But
You've got a really interesting comment here that they describe themselves as a regulator.
Yes.
And then they get quite upset when we say, hang on a minute. Mm. And they go, oh, you know, we're your friends. But they actually, reality, they are still our regulator.
Yeah.
But you say they should be referred to instead as the registrar.
Yes. Well, if you look at the Charities Act, they are described as the registrar. The Charities Act in no place calls them a regulator.
So they've just self-regulated.
They have self-described themselves as a regulator. And the problem with that term, and I know some people will go, oh, it's just a name, what does it matter?
But no, actually, names aren't just names.
Terminology does matter, exactly, because it encourages regulatory overreach. It encourages this mindset of we need to regulate, we need to control, we need to exercise power and control over what charities do and say. And I think that mindset is very unhelpful because...
Right. But, I mean, there's no... I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's nobody has a problem. In fact, many charities thought the idea of charities commission was a great idea because there are, for instance, for-profit agencies that file their profits into non-profits so they don't have to pay tax. And we don't like them any more than government does. So there are a lot of reasons why we thought it was a good idea. Mm-hmm. The narrative about charities seems to have changed.
Exactly.
The attitude to charities seems to have changed. But we haven't changed that we, like, for instance, even though the new financial end-of-year reports, service performance reports, are difficult for some people, there's no problem with us being financially reporting as an accountability measure. We have no problem with that. So it's not that we're saying bad, 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 we don't want to be accountable. It's saying stop killing us.
Exactly. I mean, and that's what I think the quid pro quo for registered charitable status is, this transparency and accountability. It's not ceding day-to-day operational control to a government department. And that's what we're seeing through their
overreach.
Regulatory overreach in terms of advocacy, in terms of social enterprise, in terms of there's so many areas where charities are literally being prevented from doing their work. And it comes down to a conception of charities as kind of restricted to handouts to the poor. And that's how we get this terrible mindset of this concept of charity is an anachronistic Victorian paternalistic colonialist.
Most charities, most organisations, and a lot of people don't even understand what it means to be a charitable organisation in the public. And we've just put out a whole governance online training system, and we talk about, you know, you can be a trust, you can be an incorporated society, but the idea whether you register as a charity or not is like an overlay over your other your other legal stance or standing. It's not you become a charity and it's a separate thing from being an incorporated society, or you become a charity and it's separate from being a trust. You're still the trust of the incorporated society. You've just chosen to go into that registration system for public trust and confidence. Mm. And I'm just wondering, it comes down to another commentary that you made about myths and misconceptions out there.
Yeah.
And how do we change the narrative about charities?
Well, I think this review is critical because if we go ahead with, the minister is on record as saying she wants to introduce a charities bill into Parliament later this year, and there's some mention in the budget about increasing the number of charities registration board members to two.
That's going to make a big difference, isn't it? Two more people to rubber stamp.
I mean, you know, I don't...
Sorry, charity services people.
I mean, you know, I don't think that adding two members... What we need is bold structural reform. Yes. I don't think tinkering around the edges is going to make any difference whatsoever. And so we'll continue on this restrictive paradigm, which is structurally undermining public trust and confidence in charities, because actually when New Zealand law is applied correctly, and I'm thinking particularly in this respect about the Crown Forestry Rental Trust case, the Latimer decisions, which went all the way to the Privy Council.
Can you explain that just briefly for people who don't know about it?
Yes, well, the Crown Forestry Rental Trust is it does have a long history, and actually I go into detail about it in the report I was concerned that people... It was the decision was being overlooked, or the decisions were being overlooked, because it is quite a complex factual matrix or factual background, and so and it's not all clear from the case itself. So I've set it out in some detail in the report, and what I'm saying in chapter 3 and also appendix B, I think it is that actually if you apply New Zealand law, the definition of charitable purpose is not so limited. Charities are actually able to be innovative. They're able to advocate in furtherance of their charitable purposes. They're able to be key, integral to the solution rather than symptoms
take
of the problem.
Risks.
Exactly.
And they reach into communities like government can't.
Exactly.
I mean, if you kill the charities, what's left?
And if you stop them from doing that, I mean, that is what makes them distinctive and valuable. Their independence is their hallmark. It's what distinguishes them from government. And if you stop them from doing that, well, you basically undermine them completely.
And that goes down to the advocacy issue.
Yeah.
Because what is a charity if it's not advocating for the people that it works for? Yet charities are not supposed to be advocates. And it's how people describe what an advocate means. What an advocate means to someone in government is completely different to what an advocate means to somebody in a charity who's speaking on behalf of their people. But it seems like a clench on the freedom of speech.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it really bothers me that there's a perception out there that charities shouldn't do advocacy, because absolutely they should. That is what they're there for. That is how people come together for a shared purpose.
Yeah.
And to get cut through in this current climate, or you know, no individual is going to have the cut through that a charity has. That's why people come together. Charities should be most of the key significant changes that have been achieved over the centuries, including abolition of slavery, universal suffrage, you know, not smoking in cars, you name it. It's charities have been integral to these social change developments that have occurred. And to stop them from doing that, we are basically cutting off our democracy at the knees.
Yeah. So the paradigm that we're looking through, where we see charities' independence as their hallmark, we should have a right to self-determination.
Well, what the bill that I've drafted in Chapter 9 of this report, I recommend, and I've actually set it out in some detail, which is why the report is so long, and I understand that it's book length, but I do think that charities are worth it. And what I've done is really tried to amplify the submissions that were made to the government's review. And basically, it's very clear, in my view, that we need an enabling framework for charities. This process of restriction, regulation, regulation for regulation's sake is absolutely not working. We need to enact an enabling framework for charities. Government needs to invest in the charitable sector and get out of the way. Yeah. And that's what this report is intended to do. And the draft bill in Chapter 9 is a bill that would amend and restate the Charities Act with a view, you know, to enacting an enabling framework.
Yep. So my final really, shocking comment is, and you can respond to it how you wish, but it seems to me that they're becoming almost authoritarian about charities and... Well,
that's what really worries me, is that we're seeing increasing authoritarianism around the world. And I appreciate that, you know, life is very uncertain. The world is in a very uncertain place, not only with climate change, pandemics, wars, you name it. And in those sort of circumstances, people often look to strong leadership. But actually, the real solution to these types of issues is social cohesion. It's coming together. It's strong communities. Exactly. And the
strong communities, exactly. That's where charities live,
exactly.
and are embedded, yeah.
And stopping them from doing that, which is what I think the current framework is doing, and what I fear any new bill is going to make worse, is actually completely undermining our democracy.
So strong words there, folk, and I can't recommend enough that you take a look at this report. It is a big report, but you can pick and choose your chapters that you want to read. Where do people go to pick up your report?
Well, it's on the New Zealand Law Foundation website. It's on my website as well, Sue Barker Charities Law. And if you email me, I'm happy to email you the link. It's basically a book, you know, but people still read books, don't they?
So what's your email?
Susan.Barker@charitieslaw.co, and there's no.nz, it's just.co. And I really would encourage the charitable sector to come together, because it's up to us. We're going to get the legislation that we deserve. And if we value our democracy, we have to come together. It's now or never.
Yeah, it's once the charities law is passed, trying to get anything different. We've just experienced that with the Incorporated Societies Act. So folk, take a look at this. Take a look at this report. It's huge. It's backed by the Law Society. It's taken
Foundation.
Law Society Foundation. It's taken 2 years to put together. But man, oh man, I can't tell you strongly enough, take a look at this and then start responding. Start responding. So thank you, Sue, for all the work and for the exciting conversation. And honestly, I'm sure the people on the Charities Commission are lovely people, and on the board, and everybody's doing their best. But they are run by law, so they're not regulators. It's not in the law that they're regulators. Remember that. Okay. And is that a good note to finish on?
Thanks so much, Roz. I appreciate the opportunity to chat. Thank you.
Thank you.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.